Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. One of my longtime viewers, poor old Roy, is a retired Dallas policeman. He sends me information that not everyone has access to, and he's been a great resource for me on a few cases. You have most likely heard about this case. It became a national sensation, but in the last few years, it's been mostly forgotten. Part of what I like to do here is bring attention back to older cases. And I also asked you recently what you wanted to see more of, and you resoundingly said cold and unsolved cases. This is one of those cases. This case has always stood out because there is such clear videotape of the perpetrator, but there's also something very, very strange about the footage. This case is also very disturbing to a lot of people because this murder took place in a church. A church is supposed to be somewhere that you're safe. We all know that's not always true, but it would be nice if we could respect each other's places of worship, keep them safe, even if we don't agree with everything that goes on in that church. So yes, that's upsetting to a lot of people. On top of the fact that a woman was murdered, she was murdered in a church. Today, I'm going to let you in on how some of these retired Texas cops feel about the footage I'm going to show you. This is a strange one, and I also am going to be very curious to see what you think about it. This is the story of the strange murder of Missy Beavers. Let's get into it. April 2016. Terry Leanne Beavers, who went by Missy, is living in Midlothian, Texas, which is about 25 miles south of Dallas. Missy was 45 years old at the time. She had been married to Brandon Beavers since 1998, and the couple has three children. Missy loved to work out, and she had begun teaching aerobics classes to the neighborhood women. The classes were held at Creekside Church of Christ. As you can see here, it's a large building that houses a good-sized congregation. There's a gymnasium in the church, but most of the time Missy taught her classes outside. The church was a 20-minute drive from Missy and Brandon's house, and the classes were very early in the morning. Missy was motivated to stay in shape. She ran, she biked, she exercised. It was a big part of her life. The program she was teaching at the time was called Camp Gladiator. On the morning of April 18th, 2016, Missy woke up at her usual time, around 4 a.m., and got dressed to go teach her class that started at 5 a.m. She went through her morning routine, and then she got into her car and started the 20-minute drive to the church. That car is a silver Nissan Altima. There's also a very distinctive bumper sticker on the back of it, but police have always blurred it out, and we don't know what it is. So keep this footage in mind as we continue with the story. Missy arrives at the church, which surprisingly is covered with cameras that run 24/7 when they're motion-activated. I think that's fantastic. I think all churches should have surveillance cameras. We've had a bunch of Mormon churches here in Utah vandalized lately. And while, you know, I have issues with the church, I certainly don't agree with vandalizing them. I also know that there are a lot of jobs church members are asked to do that require them sometimes to be alone in churches. So yes, I think it's a good idea that churches have surveillance cameras. I was really impressed this one did. Cameras don't always ensure our safety, and they don't always ensure that the perpetrator will be caught, but they do help. There was a very heavy thunderstorm throughout the night and into the early morning hours of April 18th. You saw kind of the tail end of that storm in the video of the silver car. Parking lot was still wet, and it appeared like it was still drizzling. Now, apparently, when the weather was nice, like I said earlier, the fitness class would be held in the parking lot. They did a lot of running and sprinting, that type of thing, you know, ran around the church, timed themselves. But because of the rain, Missy had sent out a group message to all of the participants that the class would be held inside the church that day. Now, this, to me, is very interesting, and we're going to touch on this more in a moment. This fact kind of comes into play in a minute here. There is something else that Missy doesn't know. When she arrives at the church, it will not be empty. Somebody is already inside. At 3:50 a.m., the surveillance camera system inside the church records the following footage. As you saw there, the suspect is in police-style body armor. They are wearing body padding, a police vest, or one designed to look like a police vest, and they are wearing a helmet that hides their face. Their entire face. The suspect is holding a claw hammer, and they use that hammer to open doors as if they're being careful not to touch them and leave any trace evidence. The suspect also breaks windows with that hammer and goes through church offices, drawers, desk cabinets, that sort of thing. They're just kind of wandering around in there, which seems odd to me. At 4:16 a.m., Missy arrives at the church in her pickup truck. At 4:20 a.m., she is caught on surveillance footage walking through the church. What happens next? Missy Beavers is murdered by the person on the surveillance footage wearing the police gear. Most of us do not know the details of that murder. The police have kept a lot of those details very close to the vest. I've read threads and articles that state the police do in fact have the murder on camera, and I've read threads and articles that state it occurred in a place in the church that wasn't covered by a camera. I don't know which is true, and even my contact is not 100% sure, but I do believe Missy became aware that she wasn't alone. This church is covered pretty well, so some part of the murder has to have been captured on camera, either the perpetrator going in, coming out, something has been caught that we have not seen, we don't have access to. What the majority of us do know is that at 4:35 a.m., one of the participants arriving to take the class pulls up into the parking lot. So now we've got 25 minutes for the class to begin, but this person does not go inside the church. She actually sits in her car and waits for it to be closer to 5 o'clock. Now, I found this detail to be interesting. You got a better chance of seeing Jesus in that class than you do me, because I do not get up that early in the morning. I am not a morning person. So to find out that someone got there 25 minutes before the class started, you know, maybe she couldn't sleep. I don't know. But, you know, these ladies were serious about their fitness. My hat is off to them. I'm actually glad that she sat in her car for a few minutes. Maybe had she gone in earlier, you know, she might have met the same fate as Missy. So just before 5 a.m., two class participants walk into the church. I'm sure that was caught on camera, and I'm sure their reaction was caught on camera. We haven't seen it. But right at 5 a.m., two calls come into the 911 dispatch center. These women have found Missy Beavers. Missy has been found dead inside the church, and I'm sure these women were just in a panic. I tried to find audio recordings of the 911 calls, but I wasn't able to. If any of you know of a link, I'd love to hear those calls, so please post them in the comments if you ever find them. I'm pretty good at digging around, so maybe they're not out there. At 5:01, the Midlothian Fire Department is dispatched to the church. At 5:03, the Midlothian Police are dispatched to the church. So the fire department arrives at 5:07 and the police arrive at 5:10. The church is cordoned off and the crime scene is established. Detectives are brought in and a search warrant request is quickly drawn up. At 6:25 a.m., the police receive their search warrant and they begin with Missy's truck that is still there in the parking lot. A little later on that day, the police release just a few still frames from the surveillance footage that they have taken from inside the church. They don't release the videotape yet. The public is shocked to see these images. It's shocked to learn that the perpetrator has been caught so clearly on camera. At this point, the police state to the public that the motion-activated surveillance cameras inside the church, quote, did not record any interaction between Missy and the suspect. Now, this causes a lot of confusion, which probably that was what was meant to do. They didn't want to give away too much. Interaction would mean them speaking or some type of a confrontation. Apparently, that did not take place. They've said that didn't take place. But because of what I'm going to show you in a moment, we do know that Missy heard something and turned her head just before she was attacked. So again, it's not completely clear. So what I want to talk about is what I said a few moments ago. It'll become an element later on. Did this person in the church know that the class had been moved inside because of the rain? Did this person even know there was an aerobics class? Did this person know Missy was going to be there? There's so many questions. But the rainstorm is interesting to me because it changed what normally would have happened that morning. Normally, the class would have been outside. I don't even know that the church would have been unlocked. So how would the perpetrator know, if they knew that the class was going to be happening, that it was not happening outside, happening inside, unless they watched that church and they knew that when it rained, they did it inside? There's just so many factors, but the rain kind of throws a monkey wrench into it, right? Now, here's the other question I have. We've seen the silver Nissan circling in the parking lot. We know the cameras caught Missy's truck pulling up. So where is the footage of the suspect entering the building? More importantly, where is the footage of the suspect leaving the building? Obviously, the police haven't released it. Now, keep in mind, when that suspect left the building, the student sitting in the car, the one that pulled up at 4:35, was most likely already there. Think about how terrified that woman must have been to find out that as she sat in her car, Missy was either dying inside or had just been killed, and that the killer was still in the building. Missy got to the building at 4:20. Now, of course, there's a chance that the murder only took a couple of minutes and the killer was gone before that student pulled in at 4:35. But even if that's the case, there's still going to be footage of that killer leaving the building. The police have a lot more than what we've seen. After the discovery of the body and the investigation takes place, it's later on in the day now, Missy's body was removed from the church and taken for autopsy. The police decided not to release her cause of death due to an ongoing investigation. That was then. Later on that same day, the police held a brief press conference, and they kind of walk back a statement that they made earlier. And this is where we really get down to the nitty-gritty of this case. We all assume a suspect like this is a male, but what if it isn't? My police officer friend Roy has watched this footage over 100 times. He has also spoken with some retired Texas Ranger friends of his that have also watched the video hundreds of times. They believe that you are looking at a female. I haven't viewed this as many times as they have, not by a long shot, but I want to show you this particular moment right here. This moment right here looks female to me. I can't really verbalize why, I can't give you an explanation, but it just looks female to me. Now, this motion, these movements, the kind of lifting of the hammer and the looking around, not so much. I also have to say that I know men that I feel have more of a feminine look to them when they move. I'm actually thinking of one person in particular that I know that moves a lot like this person does, and it's a male. So on the day of the murder, the police had stated they were looking for a male. Well, later on, they walked that back and they stated they did not know if the subject was male or female. My contact on this case, Roy, gave me his login info so I could search the Dallas News database. And let me tell you, there are a lot of articles that came out really every single day for a while. Some of them even contradict themselves because one day it's a man, one day it's a woman, one day they're sure, one day they're not. It was just kind of a lot of info coming out very quickly. But really, one of the most important elements of this case is this a male or a female? Because it would change the motivation. It would change why that person was there. It would change everything if it's a female. The FBI became involved in this case. I don't know exactly what the protocol is as to why the FBI gets involved in some cases and not others, but they did assist on this case. Agents contacted a doctor, a podiatrist. For my foreign viewers, a podiatrist is a doctor that specializes in feet, and they have to go to school, I believe, 10 years. They do a lot of surgery on feet, and they specialize in reconstructing injured feet, that sort of thing. The podiatrist that was brought in on this case is a doctor that has helped in many cases over the years where a suspect's face is covered. Why? Because podiatrists are also specialists on gait. Not this kind of a gait, but gait. The way a person walks. The way they hold themselves as they walk. The way their arms swing. The way their feet turn outwards or inwards as they walk. I found some footage of this podiatrist talking about what he saw when he watched the tape. I found it very interesting, and I think you will too.
The FBI asked Dr. Nierenberg to apply his expertise to video of the Missy Beavers murder suspect.
When I took this case on, I had a police officer put on singular armor and walk with and without the armor.
He says wearing that heavy gear and carrying the weapon would affect gait. So it's difficult to know if that's how the killer would move in regular clothing. And while much has been made of the way the suspect walks,
you can see how the left foot is just slightly out-toed there and the right is significantly out-toed in this person.
Nierenberg says that is not uncommon.
A large number of people in the population obviously are going to have that.
Another big question in the case is gender. People aren't sure if the killer is a man or a woman. And Dr. Nierenberg says neither is he.
You can't make a determination if it's a male or a female because of variation in gait. That is a dangerous thing to do.
This is not the only video Nirenberg studied. He says investigators from the case sent him recordings of people to see if he thought they walked like the suspect.
The FBI sent me persons who were of both genders. I don't believe they knew that they were being recorded.
Of the men and women they sent you, how many did you say could be possibilities?
I believe one.
He says the FBI thanked him for his time and said they'd be in touch if they developed new evidence. That hasn't happened. He says the one thing about the case that he can't forget is the video never seen by the public.
It just sticks with you because you know what's coming.
He saw Missy Beavers inside the church. He says she turned her head, startled, appearing to hear something off camera. It was very likely the moment she realized she was not alone.
We've all watched those horror movies where you say you got to get out of that house. And, you know, and this was the real thing.
To be clear, the doctor did not see the murder, but he tells us what he saw has stayed with him.
What do you think of that footage, of that theory? There are moments when the suspect leans up against the walls for kind of support, and that right foot does appear to be strangely positioned. Some people have even posited that the suspect has a prosthetic leg or foot. The gait is very distinctive. I just find it so odd that the person wanders around aimlessly, just through the halls of the church. They're definitely not hiding or crouched down in a corner stalking. They're like browsing, almost. It's odd. This is really strange behavior, and I'm really curious to know what you think of the footage. In the days following the murder, some information comes to light that people who knew Missy find surprising. Very shortly after the killing, investigators get a warrant and they search Missy's cell phone, her iPad, and her computer. Missy has been speaking to someone other than her husband. Details on this are very, very sparse, and we have to give the police the leeway they need to keep things like that private. This is a cold case. But apparently, Missy had been exchanging messages with someone that the police characterize as familiar and flirtatious. Some of these messages were then characterized as intimate, and those messages had been deleted off of Missy's devices, but the FBI was able to recover them. Nothing ever truly disappears from your computer or your cell phone. Now, again, I wish I could give you more details on this, but the police are keeping things very close, and I understand that. On April 21st, the police obtain a third search warrant, and that warrant, which is public, contains some information that lets us know Missy died from a head wound and that an unknown instrument was used to kill her. The day after that, police release the surveillance video, not just stills from it, and we get to see the suspect walking around for the first time, swinging what has been determined to be a hammer. So let's talk about the prevailing theories. The first is that the suspect broke into the church to rob it and that they didn't know Missy was going to be there. That was honestly the first thing that came to my mind when I heard about this case in 2016. But there are problems with that theory. The first is that nothing was stolen. So there goes robbery. That first theory is pretty quickly ruled out. The second theory, and one that I don't think has been looked into as much as maybe it should have been, is that this is some sort of a hate crime and that the suspect targeted the church because they hate Christians, or maybe they have some sort of a beef with the pastor or the members. I haven't seen this theory explored much, but for me personally, it holds some weight. There are a lot of lunatics out there, you guys, and sometimes people get hyper fixated on something, obsessed, you know? Could that have happened here? Could this person be angry at some element of this particular church and they broke in and started snooping around, you know, breaking windows and things like that? Which brings me to my next point. If the person was there specifically to kill Missy, why break windows? Why look around in offices? Why open doors? Why snoop around? So this second theory of this being some kind of a hate crime, I had a hard time finding anybody that really had thought about that. Maybe it's because, you guys know, I do a lot of looking into cults and religions and things like that, and I see a lot of vandalism. Maybe I'm prone to think that way because it doesn't seem like anybody else believes that to be the case. And again, I have far from all the evidence and all of the information. But why the snooping around and breaking windows, you know, if they were there for Missy? That's weird to me. The third and obvious theory is that the killer knew Missy was going to be at the church and they went there to kill her. So let's talk about that for a second. Later on, it comes out that Missy has received a strange message on her LinkedIn account. Someone has sent her a message that we have never seen it in public, but it's been characterized as weird and creepy. The insinuation has been that someone was watching Missy. Someone was stalking her. In the years following the murder, there have even come about rumors that the killer filmed the murder of Missy with her cell phone. Whether or not that's true, who knows? We don't even have probably half of what the police have, but those are the prevailing theories. The husband, Brandon, was never a suspect because he was confirmed to be on a fishing trip in Mississippi at the time of the murder. Again, if someone was watching Missy, they would probably know this. Could have killed her at home. On April 22nd, 2016, a few days after the murder, Randy Beavers, who is Brandon's father and Missy's father-in-law, takes a long-sleeve shirt of his to the dry cleaner in Midlothian. It had blood on it. The dry cleaners were aware of the murder and they contacted the police. The shirt was taken into custody for testing. Now, of course, word of this spread like wildfire, and I remember it well. I remember hearing about the murder and then hearing about the father-in-law who had taken a shirt to the dry cleaners that had blood. And I was like, oh, well, you know, obviously, it's solved. That's it. Usually, it's somebody in the family. So all of these stories start to come out. People are probably making a lot of them up about how the father-in-law was in love with Missy or that he hated Missy. They got along too well. They didn't get along, you know, all the things that normally happen in these circumstances. I'm sure this was really awful for Randy and for his wife and for Brandon. For a couple of weeks, they had to endure all of these rumors while the shirt was tested. But the test came back just as Randy told the police they would. The blood on his shirt was dog blood, blood he got on his shirt when he broke up a fight between two dogs. So my apologies to Randy. Like everybody else, I kind of jumped to conclusions there. The police then got 9 search warrants for people's cell phones that knew Missy or that they suspected in Missy's death. Some of these people were Brandon and Missy's in-laws. But because no arrests have ever been made, we have to assume that these people are innocent. Missy's mother then goes on the news and reads a very heartfelt letter. It's very touching. She reads to the killer. She talks to him, asking for help and for closure. By the beginning of May, police have given more details on Missy's death. They state that she had multiple puncture wounds to the head and to the chest that are consistent with the hammer the suspect was carrying. Throughout the month of May 2016, we learned that many, many people have been investigated. The NYPD digital tracking team had actually been brought in to assist. They have an expert team that deals with cell phones. So they gathered all the cell phone records, they went over all the suspects, and still, nothing. On May 20th, the police stated to the public that the suspect was between 5'2 and 5'7, but they didn't know the exact height or the sex of the suspect. They also stated that they had eliminated Missy's friends, coworkers, and family members as suspects. A $20,000 reward was then offered for information leading to an arrest. That happened in June. By October, it was increased to $50,000. Now, that footage I showed you of the Nissan didn't come until a year after the murder. I wanted to show it to you to give you a better sense of the chronological timeline, but the public, we didn't actually see that footage until a year after the murder. So then that comes out, there's all new theories, people turning in their neighbors and their friends. Then in April of 2019, 3 years after the murder, the police state that they've been able to get an exact height for the suspect and that it is 5'8" tall. Billboards with Missy's face on them were installed, and by 2021, the reward was up to $150,000. As the years passed, the case grew colder and colder, and now, 6 years later, in the words of my friend Roy, there is just nowhere left for police to go with this. There have been several serious suspects come and go, but the police haven't officially named anyone. You know me, I usually have an opinion on these things, but I'm not sure I know what I think about this one. The one thing I can't get out of my head is this. If the person dressed in police protective gear goes there to kill Missy Beavers, why the snooping around and the window breaking? That just sticks out in my head. It's weird. The obvious reason they would do that was to try to make it look like a robbery, but they didn't take anything. If they were breaking the windows to make it look like a robbery, why wouldn't they take something? And why were they walking around and snooping in drawers and offices and things like that? Wouldn't they have a bag with them to take some items to make it look like a robbery? Then the other thing is, hey, this is Texas. Three things they got in Texas: donut shops, churches, and gun shops. If this person was going there to kill Missy, why not take a gun? And then again, there's the theory that this was possibly some kind of a hate crime. Maybe someone angry at the church, at Christianity in general. It just makes me wonder if this was someone trying to hurt the church and Missy just showed up at 4:20 in the morning, which was unexpected. Or they could have intentionally murdered Missy in the church to forever scar the church, to damage its reputation and legacy. I debated on whether or not to include this in this episode, but I'm going to. I have a hard time thinking this was the person Missy was maybe having some sort of an extramarital fling with, and it's due to my bias. I have a lot of friends that obsessively work out. You know who those people are attracted to? Not pudgy 5'8 men with limps. Nothing wrong with any of those characteristics. I'm just saying, from my old lady experience, that's not who women that are super into their bodies, those aren't the kind of guys they're attracted to. Now, stranger things have happened. There's no doubt about that. But anyway, I just don't think this is the person Missy was exchanging messages with. Also, I'm sure the police have looked into that person. And wouldn't there have been an arrest by now if it was? This killer could very well have been a stalker. They could have been watching Missy for who knows how long. This is one of those cases where there are honestly more questions than there are answers. The case is now stone cold. Even in the Dallas Morning News archives that Roy sent me, the last article was dated 2019. I cannot imagine what this has been like for Missy's family, for her husband, and especially for her children. I want them to know that our community is thinking of them and hoping for some sort of closure on this matter. If you know anything, anything at all that you think might help, please contact the Midlothian Police Department at 972-775-3333. Department representatives have stated that they receive leads on this case almost daily and that they are determined to find out who killed Missy Beavers early on that rainy Texas morning. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Hit the like button if you liked the video, subscribe to my channel if you want to support me, and you can even join my Patreon. You will get some bonus content there if you do. We do some dinner episodes where you come to dinner with us, do a little behind the scenes stuff. It's been kind of fun. The ultimate goal here is to raise money for cold case DNA storage testing, and you can help with that for a couple bucks a month. Stay safe, my friends, and be kind to each other. And I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.